I had somebody at some conference ask, like, you know, what's the best advice you give? They didn't say agile advice, right? Just best advice. And mine was like, never marry a woman whose dad was handy around the house, right? Because my wife all the time would be like, can you build a shelf over there? No.
I'm Brian Milner, and this is the Agile Mentors Podcast, a show about both the personal and organizational journey towards agility. My friends and I will be sharing with you what we've collectively learned from seeing thousands of companies' agile implementations, the perils and pitfalls, as well as the secrets to success. We'll share our personal in-the-trenches experiences so that you can apply what we've learned in a practical way in your careers. We also hope to hear and learn from you as well. If you're like us and are always in search of better ways of working together, you're in the right place. Join us, mentor, and be mentored. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Agile Mentors Podcast. So glad to be with you again. We have back with us Mike Combe. So welcome back in, Mike.
Thanks, Brian. I'm happy to be here.
Always excited to have Mike with us. And I wanted him to come back with us because we have another really big topic that Mike is one of the foremost thinkers on, and that is estimation. So I wanted to dive into that topic and talk about the whole realm of estimation and kind of the ins and outs of it. And to kick us off in talking about it, I think the most important thing to start with is why, right? Why would we, you know, I hear people ask that question sometimes. Why would we waste time estimating? Why is it important for us to try to figure out the size of things? How do you normally address that?
Well, it's a great question. Estimating is not necessary for every team. So there are some teams for which estimating will be a waste. So totally on board with that. Estimating really does a couple of things for us. One is the act of estimating makes us smarter about the work, right? So we think about it, we have to be prepared for it. We think about what could go wrong, what's going to be needed, and we're going to be smarter as a result of that. I'm not saying that justifies estimating yet, but that's a benefit, right? The second benefit of it is it lets product owners or whomever they are, but it lets some of our business folks make prioritization decisions. And if you have, let's say, a feature that's going to take, and I don't want to talk about story points yet, I'm sure we'll get to all that, but let's just say it's take one day, right? Versus something that's going to take 100 days. That's going to tell your product or something about whether they want that thing, right? Say you drive by the Maserati dealership and you think, wow, that's a nice looking car. I'll stop in and buy one. You know, it's probably cost maybe a little bit more than my Honda. I'll buy the Maserati today. And, you know, you go in thinking maybe it's going to cost $30,000 and you find, I think they're like $200,000 or $300,000. That's going to change your purchase decision, right? Just like it's going to change the product owner's purchase decision if we tell them it's 1 point or 100. No matter the cost of something, this is a little bit of psychology or the make this not true, but ignore that. No matter what the cost of something, the product owner wants it the same amount, right? I want this feature, whether it's $1 or $100, I want this feature. And when I find out the cost, I may or may not buy it. So the second benefit there is that it lets product owners or business stakeholders make prioritization decisions. The third reason is that it allows us to make statements about the future, to make predictions, to say, okay, how much will we have in 3 months? I think it'll be between this and this amount. Notice I used a range there. I like to use ranges. But in the next 3 months, we'll give you either these 15 user stories, maybe all the way down to these 20, right? We'll give you 20 items. So it lets us make predictions about the future. So those are the three reasons for me. The first one, getting smarter, that's not very compelling. It is a benefit, not compelling. The second and third reasons, those on their own are compelling. If somebody's asking you to make predictions, where will you be in 3 months or something like that, you should estimate. If your product owner wants that data to help prioritize, that would be a good reason on its own to estimate. But not every team is in a situation that where these factors apply. So not every team does have to estimate.
Yeah. I know I encountered, and I'm sure you've encountered it quite a bit, but the whole hashtag no estimates movement and you know, I've sat through and I've listened to, you know, Woody Zuhl, the guy who's kind of kicked that thing off. And Woody's a great guy. He's really smart. He's intelligent. And when I heard him talk about it the first time, I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to be ready to fight this because, you know, I was an estimate person. And then when he got through talking, basically the it kind of boiled down to estimate only when you need to, right?
Which is what I've been saying my whole life, right? I mean,
I'm
100% on board with that. The thing, and this is going to give me some hate mail, because I don't normally talk about no estimates, because anytime I do, I get hate mail. It's clickbait. It's clickbait. It's got this name where you're like, well, I got to read that. It's kind of like what Kent Beck had said originally about extreme programming. He gave it this name, extreme, right? That was going to get a lot of attention, and he acknowledged it was going to hurt him in the long term, popularity of that process. And it probably did, because bosses are not sitting around, you know, after hours going, we should be more extreme in the IT department, right? Our software dev group should be more extreme. No, they're thinking around saying, you know, what can we do to be safe, right? And no estimates. Cool. You got a nice little marketing tag there, clickbait tag, but it's really about estimate when you need, exactly like you said. And I'm on board with that. Oh, and always have been, estimate when you need. And there are too many bosses who ask for estimates just so they can sleep better at night. Notice how it wasn't one of my reasons to estimate, right? So the boss can sleep better. Other bosses ask for estimates just so they can hold a team to it, right? Because they know most teams will underestimate, especially in aggregate. And when that team underestimates, the boss can say, you promised it to me by this month. What do you mean it's going to be one more month? Right? And they want to use that as their way to manage, right? I'll hold you to the deadline because you made the deadline. Those are wrong, right? And no, you shouldn't estimate for those reasons. But for legitimate reason, yeah, you should.
Yeah. I mean, I try to put myself in the shoes of the organization, the others that are asking these questions. And imagine, you know, if you were going to have your kitchen remodeled. You know, you're not going to have your contractors come in and say, you know, hey, I want my kitchen remodeled. How long is it going to take? Oh, we can't tell you that. It's going to take as long as it's going to take. You know, we're agile. We're going to just do this however we want to do it. You need some kind of idea. You need to know, is this going to be a 6 month, you know, time that I don't have a kitchen, or is it going to be a couple of weeks?
Yeah. We're getting our car repaired right now. And it's really frustrating because they won't give us an estimate, right? They're like, we don't know. And some of the parts get here from Japan or whatever. And so we have no idea when we're getting our car back. So, and if they told us it would be 6 months, we'd probably go buy a car and then sell that one when it's a repair, it's a major collision, but we have no idea right now. And so you think about no estimates, it's like, and again, great concept if it's estimate when necessary. That's not a very interesting hashtag, right? it's not really after no estimates. And you don't see things like, you know, the SVP of software development out there saying no estimates, right? They need estimates. Too many teams are forced to estimate in bad situations, but we don't want to get rid of them for everybody.
I agree. I think there is some kind of marketing aspect to it. I mean, I'll share a little secret here with everyone. You know, everyone knows I did a talk at the Scrum Gathering this year, and my one of the talks was about daily scrums, and it was called Daily Scrums Suck. You know, and then it goes on to say that, you know, how I killed the daily scrum. Well, you know, the point of the whole story was not that I really killed it. You know, it's just that there's an aspect of marketing that you say, hey, I've got to have a catchy title. I've got to have something that grabs people's attention. So I think no estimates does, you know, do that. It grabs your attention. And like you said, it's a better hashtag than only estimate when necessary.
Yeah, I'm not a marketing person. You know, I come up with an idea and I start doing it. I come up with the world's worst name for things. I have an estimating approach or a planning approach I talk about in my Succeed with Agile book that I didn't give it much of a name. I just called it big room planning, right? Because like I would do it in a big room, right? And then later I heard that Safe was calling their planning process big room planning. It, I don't know if they still do, but at one point it was like, oh, wow, that's a really bad name from me. I mean, I don't know if they got it from there, but I just don't think of branding things. I'm not creative in that way. So,
yeah, this is great stuff. So let me move into another kind of question here. We kind of briefly touched on, or we mentioned the idea of a story point. And, you know, when we talk about estimation, there's lots of different ways to estimate. But, you know, one of those really popular ways and the way that you and I like to teach is about using story points. So when someone asks you, how would you define what a story point is? If you give me a definition for a story point, how would you do that?
Yeah, a story point is a relative estimate of effort, right? So we are estimating the effort to do the thing, and it's relative, meaning they're not on an absolute scale. There's no like everybody in the world is going to agree this is a three. They're relative. So when I say something is a three, it's taking half as long as a six, or, you know, approximately half as long as a six. So we're estimating what's called a ratio scale. And a ratio scale is all that matters is the ratio of the numbers. So I can call it 3 and 6. I call it 30 and 60. I can call it 3 billion and 6 billion. Doesn't matter. It's the ratio that matters. And an estimate of effort, right? So effort is basically the amount of time something's going to take, but in a non-time denominated unit. In the old days, a lot of people would do this with person hours, right? And that's an okay approach, except, you know, we stuck up into your person hour, my person hours, right? And so a story point is a relative estimate of effort, where effort is defined as the volume or amount of work to do, how much of it is there. And in terms of the risk inherent, right? Something risky, I want to add a little bit of, you know, call it padding or whatever you want, but I want to add a little bit for the risk in case the risk hits. I also want to adjust the story points for uncertainty, right? Uncertainty. I'm not sure about this. We don't know how the customer is going to want this. So risk and uncertainty, we can pull those apart if you want later, but when I think of risk and uncertainty is basically the same thing right now. They are different. And then the last part, the fourth part would be complexity. Right? Something that is complex will take longer than something that's not complex. And so we're looking at something and thinking about the complexity of it, the risk, the uncertainty, and the amount or volume of work. So those four factors are what influence the value that we put on something.
Yeah. There's a story I tell sometimes about how I you talked about, is it your time or is it my time? If you're talking about time, you know, I had a developer that I worked with a while back that loved him to death. He was the greatest developer in the area that he was a developer. He was just really, really, you know, proficient at his skill. But we were estimating, this was prior to me, you know, using Scrum, and we were estimating in time, and everything was estimated in time. And for this developer, everything was about a couple of days. When you'd ask him how long it would take him to do something, a couple of days.
Yep.
Didn't matter if it was 3 weeks or if it was an hour, you know, everything was going to take a couple of days. And I actually remember having people in the company come to me and say, hey, you got to write that person up in this performance review because he's not very good at estimating. He's not really doing a good job of estimating the time it's going to take to do something. And it just struck me at the time, it felt like, well, this is wrong. This just doesn't feel right because we didn't hire this guy to be an expert estimator. We hired this guy to be an expert programmer, and he is. He's doing he's knocking it out of the park, everything he does. Just if you ask him how long it's going to take him to do something, he couldn't do that very well. Flipped later when we switched over to Scrum and we started to estimate in story points, we had no problem from that point forward. You know, once you start to get into things like velocity, the speed at which the team is going, how many story points they're doing per sprint, you know, it doesn't matter if he was estimating it incorrectly because we're using the scale of whatever it is that he's doing to apply that to the team speed moving forward. So I always like to reference that because, you know, I think it is kind of silly sometimes that organizations try to make their developers be good at estimating time when none of us are. We're all really bad at it.
As long as that developer is being consistent, you got what you wanted, right? Because if he always said something was like, let's say 7 days, if he always said something was like 7 days, took two, fine, right? When we use story points, it's going to adjust for that, right? So we got velocity is another great equalizer there. So what we're looking for in Agile estimate with story points is it's much easier because all we have to be is consistent. And that's the relative aspect of things. Think about a team that's estimated 100 items in their past and they estimate item number 101. They just look at the old 100 and see which one is this like. They don't even have to estimate it really. They just say, okay, it's like that one. How many points do we put on that one? 7. Done. Right. So they just look at the old ones and find equivalences.
Yeah. One other thing that I see that happens sometimes, and I know my opinion on this. It's one of my pet peeves, but I'm just curious kind of how you address it. You know, I see lots of teams that it's what I call managers behaving badly, yeah. Right? They see this thing, the story point thing, and they think, I can compare team A against team B based on their story points. How do you coach organizations where you see that as an issue?
What I do is I'll talk to the managers about that and say, look, we've really got something good with this abstract unit of measure, this velocity and story point idea. It's something really useful. You can ruin it. You can use it as one more way to beat up a team, one more way to criticize them, complain, cajole them into what you think is going to be better performance. But when you do, all that's going to happen is teams are going to do what is called estimate inflation, right? They're just going to start to round things up. And all of a sudden, you're going to have higher velocity, and that's going to sound great, but it's not going to be any better. And you're going to lose this ability to really measure progress in a more meaningful way. So we're going to take this thing that could be potentially very valuable to an organization, we're going to ruin it. And I'll half jokingly add this next part. Look, if you want to yell at your team about bad performance or this, I'll sit down with you and we'll brainstorm a few ways to yell at your team. But let's not use story points as the way to do that, right? Because we ruin something that's useful.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I agree with that too. I mean, I think it's not designed for that, right? It's not designed to be used as a performance metric. So when you-
It is, you're right. But it's a total shame that we can't, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. Man, I wish we could do this, right? Because wouldn't that be awesome, right? But what we need there would be a more meaningful, realistic measure of output and or outcomes, whatever you want to think about it as. But we don't have that. We can't really do that with knowledge work. Oh, lines of code or something like that. Doesn't really work. So it's a real shame. And I totally can sympathize with the desire to use it that way. And you know what? I don't know that if a manager wants to do that kind of quietly and look at that and go, you know, this one team's kind of, you know, increased their velocity 50% in the last year. This team hasn't. That could be useful information. I wouldn't go criticize the team with it on that. I'd want to balance it with my subjective view of the team. Does that team seem 50% better? You know, or are they just kind of inflating their numbers deliberately or not? It can happen. But I think it can be just something, you know, the quiet of your own desk you might look at, but I'd be very careful to use it. And I would never mention it to a team. I'd want to use it as kind of support for what I was observing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. They're just going to inflate their estimates if you do that. And they're going to all of a sudden a two is a three and a three is a five, and, you know, on and on and on. And, you know, you're not really changing anything.
Yeah, that can happen that's not unique to story points. That can happen with person days or anything. It can start to happen, but it's a bad problem with whatever the unit is.
Yeah. One other kind of sideline issue for this, because we have our story points as a basis and we're getting the team to, you know, assign story points to our things that we're working on. We're really doing that so that we can then kind of, like you said, make guesses about how we, you know, how long it might take something to be done or when something might be finished. We've had this discussion before, kind of the wording of this and the differences in the wording here. So I kind of want to dig into this a little bit, the idea of an estimate versus a forecast versus a projection. What do you think about those?
I don't think it makes any sense to distinguish those things. There's no meaningful difference in what those mean. A forecast is about the future, and that's all it means. It is an estimate about the future. An estimate could be about the future or the past, right? Mm-hmm. And so they can both be used to in equally perfectly well to talk about a future event, right? But you would not talk about I forecasted last month's weather would be. Right. So if you say forecast, I mean, I'm just about this. This is like what they mean in English. If you talk about forecast, you are absolutely talking about the future. Right. If you're using estimate, you could be talking about the future or the past. So let's say, Brian, I mentioned my car was being repaired. You come visit me. My car's all fixed up. And you're like, wow, they did a nice job. I estimate that probably cost them $10,000 to repair your car. That would be a reasonable use of estimate. Or you could say, oh, my car's not fixed. You could say, yeah, I had a similar problem one time. And I'm going to estimate that it's going to cost $10,000 to fix. So estimate could be forward or back. Forecast is only forward. And I just hate that people make a big distinction about this because either one works for going forward. Estimations has been the term used in software development since it began. It wasn't ever forecast. And so people came along and said, oh, we're going to call them forecast because they're not estimates. No, they are, right? And I just wish those who kind of started this inanity had actually looked at a dictionary first, because it just doesn't make any sense, right? We have the same thing with the word commitment, right? Oh, we don't make commitments. Commitments don't mean guarantees, right? And so forecast is about the future. Estimate is future or past. Sorry for the rant. That one annoys me. Just such a stupid debater. stupid thing to be going on. We have bigger pumps in software development than the word to use. I think words are important, but no reason to change the word there unless you're up to something beyond that.
No, that's exactly why I ask, because like you said, I think words are important and I think we should, you know, say what they mean, but there are times that I hear people get a little too picky about what one of these words or one of the other ones means. And like you said, if we're talking about the future, we can use either, right? Either one is talking about a future event. So I love that. So I just wanted to get, I've heard you say that before and I wanted to share that with everyone else.
Well, I would be totally on board if we had like every computer science university in the country puts out a, you know, a manifesto, sign this, we're going to call them the forecast from now on because they're about to. I'm signing. I'm totally on board with that. Like, this is an industry, let's change the vocabulary. Totally on board with that. But let's not pretend it's anything different than an estimate. A forecast is an estimate about the future.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So one other area that I think it's kind of a key when this topic comes up, because I get this question all the time in classes, kind of the scaling challenge of this. You know, we can explain this and it makes sense when we're talking about one team and trying to, you know, estimate how one team's progress is going to translate into the future. But how do you start to do that when you have five teams that are working on the same product? How do you keep the scale relative across these multiple teams? How do you coach that?
What I do is I would get all five teams to send perhaps two or three people to a meeting. We'll do this on Zoom and we'll have, so it's be 10 or 15 people, let's say, and that's big, but it's totally doable. You'll say, I want that meeting in a moment. We're going to have 10 or 15 people on Zoom. We're going to estimate, right? I'm going to have them estimate perhaps a dozen items. And then after we've done that and all 10 or 15 people agree on those dozen estimates, we're all going to walk back to our teams with what I call a Rosetta Stone of estimates, right? Here are a couple of 2-point examples, great 2-point examples. Here are a couple of fives and eights and threes, maybe a 13. We've got a really good example of a handful of numbers. And think about that. Now, each team has agreement. They have agreement from two or three representatives and their team can estimate against that set. And in theory, if I were to email something to all five teams and say, hey, estimate this, they theoretically would all come back to me with the same estimate, right? Now they won't because they'll make different assumptions. Oh, I assume we have to do this. I assume we don't have to do that. So a little bit difference in the assumptions, but if everybody made all the same assumptions, they would pretty reliably come back with the same estimate. I have tested that with, maybe a dozen teams, not very many, not enough that I ever would want to quote anything on it, any meaningful, but I have tested that and seen that that has been the case where I sent teams the fairly detailed user stories, more than I would normally write in real life, and said, yeah, now that we did that, estimate this for me. And they were pretty close, right? All within one number. And I've sent it out with just to kind of do the counter test with different assumptions. So I'd send out the story two ways to different teams that were on the same baseline and get back. And they would of course differ more when I did that. So I would bring 1, 2, 3 people from each team together. You're going to estimate, have that common baseline as a Rosetta Stone.
I think that's a great solution. And I agree totally. That's exactly how I would handle it. You know, I've tested this as well. I tested it with a class. There was a class I taught a while back that it was a large class. I had like 60 people in the class. And back in the day when we were teaching in person, we would do this exercise that we would ask them to estimate a list of animals and zoo points.
Yep.
And we wouldn't tell them what a zoo point was. You figure out what a zoo point is. So I did this in one of the classes where I had this large number of people, where I went to one side of the room after I got them all started on the exercise. And I said, I just whispered to one table and said, hey, you know, just between you and I, a zoo point is an estimate of size. And, you know, a tiger is a 5. So go. And then I'd go to the other side of the room and I'd say the same thing to another table. And, you know, we try to see how far off they got by the time they got to the larger animals.
Right.
And they would always be, you know, very, very different. And my point of doing that was just to try to tell people, yes, you can establish a baseline, right? You can put a baseline in place and it is helpful. They weren't far off, but they are going to, you know, they are going to be slightly off because they're different people. They had different conversations, different considerations, just like you said.
I had a week years ago where I was teaching in person and teaching story points to two different teams in the same week. And the first company, I was just having fun. And I just, let's estimate the billion. So we sound impressive, right? So, you know, our velocity can be 13 million. And so they estimated the millions. And I went to the next team and I told them, hey, I was just with, you know, whoever. And, you know, they're estimating the millions. It's going to be pretty, you know, pretty depressing when your boss meets them at their boss at a conference and your velocity is 23 and they're 13 million. I think you should go for the billions, right? And so they started about estimating the billions, right? The unit doesn't matter. Again, ratio scale, right? So the teams that you did, what we might have seen if we'd looked back at that data would be that they had a elephant is four times a tiger in both cases, but there would have been totally different numbers.
Yeah, that's great. The question I have for this episode from an audience person, it came in and I wanted to read this out to you because it's about basically the person is saying that they work in an environment that has very strict contractual kind of requirements. And so when they work with their clients, they have to deliver something by a certain date. And the client is expecting that, right? The client signed on the bottom line for it. I hear this quite a similar version of this question in class a lot. How do we use story points when we have this constraint of, hey, I've got a contract, I've got to deliver this by this date?
Well, the first thing is, and this may already be in place, but the first thing would be to try to get involved early enough that your story point estimates and predictions based on your velocity can influence what goes into the contract. Yeah. A lot of teams are just put into a horrible position. Somebody signs a contract. Maybe they think they know how long stuff should take and they kind of force a deadline on us. That's just wrong on so many levels. I mean, you know, who wants a deadline forced on them by somebody that is not going to do the work, right? So I'd want to try to insert myself earlier in the process. Totally fine being part of choosing a date. We've got to be done in 3 months and 4 days. Totally fine with that, but I want to be part of determining that, not have it kind of foisted on me. When we're in a high stakes environment like this, there's a couple of things that we're going to want to do, and they're kind of hard to do without like a whiteboard to go over some of this. But one of the first things that I want to do would be to think about the backlog that we have. Estimate that backlog, all the normal stuff, everything people have been trained to do before. But I want to think of that as what I'm going to call the known backlog. There's also what we're going to call the unknown backlog. Now, the unknown backlog includes two things. Things we haven't thought of that, yeah, I should have thought of that, right? If I'd had more time, if I, you know, asked better questions during client interviews, would have thought of it. So you got to put those things in there. You forgot about them or overlooked them. Better term than forgot, but you overlooked them. And then the second part of it is what are called emergent requirements. Emergent requirements are things that emerge through the process of building the product. So we build a product, we ask for feedback, and the customer says, oh, what, you know, it'd be great is if we did such and such. So we got to kind of account for the overlooked and emergent requirements on the unknown part of the backlog. So here's how I do that. I ask the team after they're done estimating, we got the backlog estimated. I'll say, okay, what part of the problem do we see? What percentage of the problem do we see? And Brian, I know you've been married a long time. And let's say your wife asks you to build something for you and you have a 1 hour conversation about it. It's not a huge project. So 1 hour conversation, you might walk away from that going, you know what? I bet I see 90% of what she wants, right? I feel pretty good about this. You know, you've probably heard about whatever it is she wants and, you know, it's been in the back of conversations. You might walk away and think 80, 90%. Contrast that with our team here at Mountain Goat is going to build something for you and you're super busy. You have maybe a half hour conversation with them and you dump a lot of information in 30 minutes, but not all of it. And they don't have time to ask all their questions and they have to go away and, you know, we're pushing them. Give us a deadline. They might look at that and go, you know what? I bet I see 50% of what Brian's after, right? Brian has just started thinking about the system. I'm sure he's going to come up with great new ideas. We only had a half hour. I'm kind of exaggerating. I wouldn't want to base anything on a half hour. But they might walk away thinking we see 50%, right? Well, think about what that does. If I only see 50% of a problem, I have to double the size of the backlog, right? Because there's a whole nother equivalent that's just as big, right? So the formula here is 1 over the percentage, right? So if I see, in your case, you see 90% of your wife's problem, 1 over 0.9, increase the backlog by 11%. So if it's 100 points today, there's 11% missing, it's 111% of what we already have. So this is going to reflect the unknown portions of the backlog. And most teams don't do this, and it's not really needed unless you're in a high stakes environment like the one you're describing. There's a couple other things I would do, but that's the main one. is to do that to get the backlog size reflected correctly. The other thing I'd want to do is, and I always do this, high stakes or not, estimate velocity as a range, right? X to Y. We're going to go from this, from 30 to 40 is going to be our velocity. I don't want to say it's going to be 35. Our average is 35. It will be 35. No, right? You're going to be somewhere around 35, but it's not going to be 35 unless you're lucky.
That's awesome. That's great advice. I love that. I love the formula and the idea of, you know, what you can see and what you can't see. I've heard people talk about it as being kind of the waterfall approach is more of a requirements delivery process. And what we do is more of a requirements discovery process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great way of thinking of that laying out. The other thing I have to say is, you know, if my wife came to me and said, hey, I need you to build this for me, my first action would be I'm calling a handyman because I cannot do that. If you want me to reach somewhere high, I'll do that. But, you know, that's about the extent of my handyman.
I had somebody at some conference ask, like, you know, what's the best advice you give? They didn't say agile advice, right? Just best advice. And mine was like, never marry a woman whose dad was handy around the house, right? Because my wife all the time would be like, can you build a shelf over there? No.
Yeah, handy and working with the car. Those are the two things that, you know, I'll turn in my man card on those. I cannot do those. I have to get help on those things.
I can do the car, but not the handyman work. I think I'm a measure once, cut twice guy, right? So I totally screwed up. So
that's awesome. Well, this has been great. I thank you so much, Mike, for coming in on this. There's so much great information on this. We could talk about, you know, this topic for another hour, but just we want to be cognizant of people's time. So thank you for coming in and talking to us about estimation.
Thanks, Brian. Always good to talk to you.
Well, once again, big, big thanks to Mike Cohn, the godfather. We appreciate Mike coming and being with us as always here on the podcast. We hope to have him around a lot more. So we'll kind of intersperse him with some of the other experts that we have on the podcast, but you can expect to hear Mike pretty regularly here on our podcast. Our next episode coming up next, we've got one that I think you're going to really like. It's going to be on Kanban. A lot of people have questions about that, want to know some more information about it. And we've got a really good guest for that you've already been introduced to, Kurt Peterson. Kurt Peterson is an accredited Kanban trainer, so he can help hopefully get us over that hump and help us understand Kanban a little bit more. If you like this episode, if you really enjoyed the topic and you want to continue the discussion, join us on Agile Mentors Community. We've got a great discussion board there. We've got a friendly community. You can post your questions. You can share your thoughts, your insights on things. You can also be a part of our monthly coaching calls. You can ask your questions there to Mike and myself, and we'll answer them. So we want to be the place where we can help you in the next step on your Agile journey. As always, we ask you to rate and review this podcast. That helps us get found by others. Tell your friends about us. Tell us that you found this and that you found a good Agile podcast. And as always, subscribe. If you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, feel free to do that. That'll keep you from doing all the manual work of trying to download this every single time it comes out. If you'd like to let us know anything, if you want to give us some topic ideas or you want to give us some feedback about the podcast, this episode or any episode we've done, send us an email at podcast@mountaingoatsoftware.com. That comes to us. We read every email that comes in. So we really covet your feedback. We want to make this the best Agile podcast that's out there. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. It's always great talking to you. Have a great week. See you next time on the Agile Mentors Podcast.